As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
All the way from Scotland. If it's not Scottish, it's crap. No, he's not Scottish. He's our buddy, Chris Williams. Good afternoon, my man. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Your jet lag is gone, I hope?
It's lingering a little bit. I've had this headache for like 3 days, and it's more about my adrenaline is gone from the trip, so I think that's the more deflating part.
And your trip was unbelievable. We will get into that, as I've told our listeners all week long, that you were at the 150th Open Championship. You were there on Championship Sunday. You also played golf in Scotland and had a great trip. So we'll get into all of that. Let's take care of some business first before we rehash your vacation shot by shot, which we're going to do, by the way. So if you don't like golf, folks, we'll just give you a heads up. Go ahead and turn us off. We'll see you next week. But Williams is here to talk about golf today. And what is your official title? I know you sit on the board. You sit on the board for what? I know what you do. I just don't know your title. I need this on a 3x5 card to tape on my studio.
I don't know if we have like roles specifically, the City Golf Hall of Fame. You know, I guess I'm on the board or just a member. It's everybody who's on the committee is in the Hall of Fame, and we kind of share responsibilities.
Okay.
In different facets.
So you're just a Hall of
Famer. We
don't
really have titles, but we're just a collective of dedicated people.
The Hall of Famer Chris Williams joins us this afternoon. That sounds better, doesn't it?
I guess, yeah.
How many times have you won the city tournament? I've lost count. I want to say three.
Yep, three times.
All right, see, I am paying attention. That's why you like me. I got it. And part of your job annually is to put on the scramble that gets things started back in May to raise interest for the City Golf Tournament. We remarked earlier in the week, Major League Baseball just had their 92nd Midsummer's Classic, the All-Star Game. Well, this was the 94th City of Bloomington Golf Tournament Match Play Championship. Just to put that in perspective, that's fantastic. So the tournament's up and running. Nothing's perfect. Nothing runs on all 12 cylinders for however long it needs to. Give me a little recap of what we learned this year from your group. I know the champions we crowned, Jim Gordillo, came on Monday, did a great job of reliving their stories with us. So I'm not interested in perhaps the champions, even though they're all friends of ours. But tell me about the tournament this year. You had a couple hiccups. What are you looking to do in the future, and how can we get things better?
Well, we inducted our newest member into the Hall of Fame, three-time champion Mitch Ord, which was very deserving. He's a Edgewood Mustang product. Remember him fondly playing on some of those really good teams that Jeff Carmichael had in the mid-2000, 2008, 2009 range, maybe a little bit earlier. Some really good teams there, but he was one of the anchors of that team and really kind of tore things up in the city tournament, and and has always been a familiar face, always someone who is a feared opponent if you play in it long enough, just because he knows how to grind, he knows how to play the course, and he knows how to putt really well, and he's a competitor. So extremely well-deserved. He's someone that knows and appreciates the history of the tournament, so we know that he will be a valuable addition to our committee. And the outlook next year is we're going to do more outreach to get the youngsters involved. We had, with the flight situations, you have to have a minimum of four players to basically have a flight exist in the tournament. And we only had three juniors sign up, three junior boys, which it was disappointing to see because it was the first time we did not have a junior division of any kind since 1952. So that really takes us back to the tail end of when we had a stretch of about, I think it was 7 or 8 years lingering from World War II where we didn't have a junior flight. I'm not sure about the circumstance of why that stretched so far into the early 1950s, but clearly we want to do more outreach with the youngsters. We want to get the junior, we have a strong junior golf presence in town, and I'm not necessarily talking about just the high schools. We do have strong junior groups at the Country Club and at Cascades. There's a PGA Junior League at both places. So You know, I don't know if we'll ever get back to the days of having 3-4 junior flights, but that's our target, is to work on getting more juniors. And obviously we continue to want to push for more female participation in the tournament. And so that's something we're going to hit the ground running with.
Well, that's good. We always learn from our experiences and we try to get everything better. And well, you know, it's one thing. It's not the price tag. I know that. That's chasing them away, because juniors are free, correct?
Correct.
So it's getting them out there. Let me ask a dumb question, because that's what I excel at in here. How about having a junior tournament a different time of the year?
We've talked about, you know, because the city tournament originally began in September. Well, and I think over the years, it was competing with collegiate athletics, football weekends, and that became, maybe that was part of it. I don't have a lot of background about why it was changed specifically to July, you know, the tail end of June into July. We talked about, it is something I think that there's going to have to be a certain level of adaptation to an adjustment to that. I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but I do know that the summers maybe are a little bit more difficult for juniors if they have other activities going on. But I think it's something, as we kind of reflect from this tournament, it is something that we can look at as a possibility. We don't want to change what makes the tournament great, and that is that it's a summer tournament. But I think we definitely want to look at possibilities of being more flexible to attract more participants, for sure.
I think the tournament's fine. I just think you make the junior tournament separate when people tell you they can play it, because the September tournament made sense. I know it's in July now, because everybody had their club championship Calcutta at the end of the year. Why? Well, so you could play all year and get ready for it. That makes total sense.
Right.
So I understand why that's happening. I think the city tournament championship flights, the numbers you've had aren't the greatest, highest halcyon days, but they're still really good. So that part I don't think maybe you need to mess with. But, yeah, if you want to play the juniors in April because that's when they have more weekends available, I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there and hoping to make it stick. So congratulations to Mitch Ord and the 94th edition put together and completed. Congratulations to all of our winners. And when are you going to put Lance Ringler in the Caddy Hall of Fame? Jeez.
Yeah, he is a presence, obviously. It's important to him. He's obviously had a major involvement and did a lot of great things writing about it, and his you know, his kind of predicting his winners back in the 90s. But yeah, he's been involved heavily behind the scenes, even if he's not advancing in his matches. He did a heck of a job on the bag for Bannister in that match, for sure.
That, he caddied for his wife, and she won about 900 of these. Did he caddy for?
Oh, absolutely.
Did he caddy for Ike at one time? I don't know.
Maybe that might be a possibility. I'm not sure. It could have been something that if Donnie Guy wasn't on the bag,
right.
Ike. That's a good question.
Right. So he might be. Well, I mean, how many is Missy won? He might be in double figures as a caddy. My goodness, it's like,
oh, absolutely.
It's like Steve Williams roaming around Cascades over there. Chris Williams is my guest today, and he's a hell of a player, 3-time city champ, and kind of had a bucket list trip. Is that fair to categorize your trip to Scotland here in the last 10, 15 days?
Oh, without a doubt, it's still kind of pinching my arm, kind of making sure that it was real. But yeah. Definitely a bucket list thing. Definitely a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, for sure.
Now, I didn't spill all the details when you were gone. I didn't want everybody to just be like, oh, okay, no big deal. How long were you there? And for the golf nuts listening to this program, let me know what tracks you played so we can just check those boxes off our bingo card, too.
Yeah, it was about a 10-day trip, leaving from Indy to Edinburgh. 6 rounds of golf. So we kind of spread it out a little bit, because we did take in a couple days at the Open, a Tuesday practice round, and we were lucky enough to be there on Championship Sunday, which I know we'll talk about here in a minute. But, 6 rounds. We flew in and got in really early in the morning on Sunday, not this past Sunday, but before. And then we left at 3:15 in the morning on Monday for Carnoustie. And that, we started out with probably the biggest heavy hitter, and we were the very first tee time at 6 a.m. And that,
wow.
That was – we were still on fumes, and I honestly do not remember much of that flight because we were still foggy. But the one thing I remember more than anything was the starter telling us that we were going to be anchoring the rest of the day because it was a full tee sheet. They go 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. the week of the Open. And we played in 4 hours flat, and the group behind us was 2.5 holes behind. So I remember we made the starter happy, and I remember the one thing that was the common theme over there the whole week, and we saw it with the scores, is there was not much wind to speak of.
Correct.
And Carnoustie is one of those courses that, you know, it's one of the tighter courses in the championship rotation. If you miss the fairway, you're dead, and you're just hacking back in the fairway. The wind was light. We played at about 6,700 yards, and the scenery, the backdrop of the hotel, the berm, we saw it on 18 where Vandeveld hit it into, and which resulted in Paul Laurie winning. I mean, you saw Hogan's Alley on the par four where he kind of hit it in that cluster left of those
every
bunkers. I mean, everything
time,
was just, yeah, every round. Yep. It was just incredible, and to start out with that. And then we played another 18 at a course called Dumbarney, which is a newer course. That is actually a man-made links. They literally took a flat farm area on a hillside and made these hills.
Pushed a little dirt around,
berms and everything. It's a modern links, and if you know about links courses, the definition is you're playing the natural terrain, the sandy coastlines, you know, everything of the elements. So that was the first two. And then we went on to play we played Prestwick. We actually went kind of all over the country. We started on the eastern part, and then we moved west to Troon, and we played a course called Western Gales, which was my favorite by far, right there on the ocean, right across from the Isle of Arran, the larger island northwest of Scotland. You can see it clearly.
Why was it your
traditional
favorite?
It was right on the coast. It was the windiest that we played. It was the traditional six out, six back. You know, it's a very, you know, traditional older links courses. The courses are side by side, close tee to green. You're not making the turn back at the clubhouse. You know, the 10th tee is actually, or the 9th green into the 10th tee is actually pretty far.
Yeah, halfway house, clubhouse. Right? That's what they call it.
It is. Barely at that, yeah. But it just, and we had great caddies. The guy had as a caddy, his dad had caddies 6 times in the Open, including the American runner-up in 1963, Phil Rogers. So that was cool, and by far our favorite. Prestwick, we played that afternoon. Have to admit, Prestwick, with all its history, was a little overrated for me. If people don't know, it was the side of the first British Open, 1860.
First kind lot of them, right?
Yes, they had like 20. St. Andrews
was 73. Yeah.
St. Andrews eclipsed it. I think Prestwick is still second overall.
Yes,
it's just too short to host anything now.
Prestwick, I think, didn't it host the first 10 or 12 editions of the Open Championship before they moved
it? It did, yeah. And I guess the RNA actually contacted them about 10 years ago to propose lengthening it. And the big hiccup, I guess, that we found kind of interesting is that the one thing the RNA wanted to have that was a stipulation is they wanted to admit female members, and Prestwick said no. So that was interesting over there. And that's something actually that's not as uncommon as you would think over in Scotland, not as progressive in some of the golf clubs. But anyway, Prestwick was historic. I think the other thing was our second 18, and we were kind of on fumes that day.
But at least you could see where the first golf was played, and if they don't change that, that's kind of cool. It's maybe not great to play, but from a historical sense, there's something to be said there. I mean, we love the Masters because it evolves to the modern technology, but there's nothing wrong with the place saying, you know what, we're going to stay back in time, and that's just how it's going to be.
Well, and they do have one hole. The 17th hole at Prestwick is basically the same exact hole that Old Tom Morris laid out in 1851. So it's the only hole that is the true original hole from the original Open. And so when our caddy told us that, I was like, me being the history guy, I kind of perked up then. And the interesting thing was they actually had circles in parts of the fairways that they marked as ground under repair that were the original sites of some of the greens. And they do an older members historic tournament where they play with old hickory shafts and they play in the Massey traditional Niblicks. Dress and they play it. Yep. And they start off that first hole was actually a par six originally. So they play it to that, which was, it's pretty incredible.
Very cool.
Last two rounds were a course called Dundonald, another modern links course that's hosted the Scottish Open before 2017 when Cabela Bayo hit that three wood from about 275 on the 18th hole to about 8 feet. They got a cool plaque in the fairway for that. I really liked that course. It clearly had the best greens. It's more of a modern, like I said, a modern links style. It's a Kyle Phillips design who designed another prominent course over there called Kings Barnes. We really liked that one a lot. And then our final round was Saturday, the day before the final round of the Open. And we were up in Aberdeen, which is northeast of Edinburgh. And we played a course called Cruden Bay. And Cruden Bay is pretty infamous because there's a very big divide that think it's, that it's, there's a big divide of people who think it's a masterpiece or it's really gimmicky. It's a top 100 in the world. It's an old Tom Morris design. It has voted the best view in Scotland, which is the ninth tee. You have to basically walk up a ramp 250 feet and you get to this cliffside and you're just there and the North Sea's right there. And it's, you just take it in for like 5 minutes before.
So they think it's gimmicky because it's man-made.
No, it's not man-made. It's actually, they think it's gimmicky because of the number of blind shots that you have on the course.
Ah.
They think it's just kind of like a carnival type golf. The thing that's interesting about it is it's a lot more like a course in Ireland because there's a lot of dunes. There's a lot of channels that you kind of go through to get to the green. It's not as flat as you would see as a links course. It's a lot of elevation change. It was incredible. And we were super happy with that. That was the one I wanted to play the most. And I was really concerned that it was not going to live up to the hype that, you know, we kind of got some tips from the No Laying Up crew. If people follow them on social media, they were really hyping it up, but it was incredible to kind of finish up our sixth and final round there.
Chris Williams is our guest this afternoon. Hall of Fame golfer, the city of Bloomington, three-time champion. A 10-day, six rounds of golf playing. And here in our last 5 minutes, let's talk some golf because you saw the championship final round at the 150th Open Championship, the old course at St. Andrews. Did it live up to all your expectations? The final round we can talk about. The golf you can't do anything about. Did that course, did the city, did the vibe, did that check all your boxes as well?
I think when you walk in and we kind of walked in right by 17T, which is the hole that's famous because you have to hit over the corner of the green fence that's guarding the old course hotel. And walking up and seeing the backdrop behind 18, it gives you chills. It's really, I think there's no other closing hole in golf that can match it. When you see the city behind it and the old R&A building to the left, which is behind the first tee, it was incredible. The one thing I think that people who traditionally play over in the U.S. will not realize is just how burned out and firm the fairways were. If you're a guy that picks the ball like I am, you would really struggle on a course like that because it's like hitting off asphalt. It really is. It's so tight. If you watch the coverage, you saw the balls just running and running and running in the fairway. It's literally as tight as you could possibly imagine. The features of nearly every hole but a few having double greens is just fascinating. It's interesting because the course, you can kind of tell what the older part of the course was, and then when you get to seven – and you kind of turn around and it goes in this clockwise circle and you can kind of see where they added on there and then 7 and 11 cross. It's just incredible. And you think about where this is where it all started. You have to think about it. You know, the fact that you're here at this moment and something historic is 150th, it just gives you chills.
How'd you get tickets?
We got lucky. There was 2.9 million people that requested tickets this year, and we got lucky. One of my family members got picked, and we basically got to choose two practice round days and two championship round days, and some other family members of ours took Saturday. So we had some other friends and family in there, distant family in Scotland at the same time playing different courses, and we took Tuesday and Sunday, and they took Saturday. So we just got lucky, and being there on Sunday was, I mean, it's just like if being at the Masters on Sunday, if not better.
I want to ask you about that. I only got a couple minutes left, but today I received my rejection letter from Augusta National. Try again next year. Sorry, you're not coming to 2023. These things happen. I've won the lottery once. I will not be upset. We had Friday 2015 Jordan Spieth tickets. That was, I'm not going to complain at all. The point you bring up about watching golf on Sunday on the course, you've got Smith doing this, and if you're not watching Smith, well, how do you see where McIlroy is? Because they're not in the same group. What was the feeling like there? Did you just listen to the roars and check your phone? How does that work?
We were situated right behind the 7th and 11th green, and we saw everybody come through pretty much for the last 10 groups. I think Spieth, two groups behind Spieth is where we started. But simultaneously, we were listening to the BBC broadcast on one of the little radios that you can pick up. And so we were kind of gaining the noise and kind of hearing what was going on. But we knew with no wind, the course was going to be, you know, it was there for the taking. And Rory's putter failed him once again, and Cam Smith proved how he's got nerves of steel to carry it for a win.
Something about finding the best putter on the largest greens on the planet. That's another interesting thing, because everybody was going to hit greens this week with no wind, and Cameron Smith punted the dimples off the golf ball. First man, you got all these weird stats. Louis Oosthuizen won his first major at the Open back in 2010 at the Old Course. First player to come back from four shots or three shots or whatever. It was great golf, and that was it. McIlroy didn't stink. He just didn't make anything. There's a difference there. And Cameron Smith shooting 64 twice in a major championship, that makes your heart beat a little funky.
Yeah, it's the ball striking and just the putting, especially that putt on 17 that he had to hit for par, knowing with things on the line, it was just incredible. And the crowd was just as excited for Cam Smith as anybody for winning it, I can tell you that.
And the putt up the from the Valley of Sin around the bunker to what? Is that the same hole we're talking about, correct? Is that the one? Because he had on 18.
Valley of Sin is 70, on 18.
70,
yep.
At 17 was the putt up the hill. 18 was the was the 75-footer two-putt to 2 feet. So, yeah, the magic club in his bag. He trashed Kapalua 34-under, set the course record there earlier this year with no wind, and he destroyed St. Andrews in the 150th. Great recap, my friend. Thank you so much for your time. At IU Artifacts, I hope. You got to put more pictures up. That's what you got to do.
I'll get to it. I will for sure.
Well, if you got a headache, just sit around and put pictures up. That'll cure your
jet lag.
There you
go.
Your insight's fantastic. I'm glad you had a trip of a lifetime. I'm glad Mitch Ord and you guys found a new one into the Golf Hall of Fame as well. And we always appreciate you joining us during golf season, my man. I'll be back in touch with you. Don't worry.
Great to chat with you, bud.